January 2nd, 2011, is the Watt from Pedro Show.
On the hotline we go. Who do we have today here?
Hello, Dick. This is Captain Beefheart of the Magic Band.
Captain Beefheart? Hold on a second. May I have your name and age?
Kathy Fletcher, 17.
Captain, this is Kathy with question number one.
Who thought of the name of the group?
I thought up the Captain Beefheart, and the rest of the group thought up the Magic Band.
Question number two.
How many members are in the Magic Band?
There are four members in the Magic Band. There are two guitars, a bass, and drums.
And the last one?
Why do you think your band is becoming so popular?
I think it's that sound. I think that sound is coming in very strong. I think that people are beginning to listen to the lyrics and get the feeling of the blues.
Captain Beefheart, here's what you're talking about.
Wanted, pretty. She lives way down in Diddy Wong, Diddy Wong.
Great sound of the Magic Band with Captain Beefheart. Did he want, did he?
Juan from Pedro Show. A rainy
New Year.
Yeah. Here, Brother Matt.
Howdy. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. We got a guest.
Yeah, hey there, Joe Boone. Welcome.
Howdy.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for coming aboard. It's a special Captain Beefheart show. We're going to celebrate some of the music life of Captain Beefheart by letting him speak in his own words. We've got a lot of spiels.
Nice.
Joe Boone scoured from parts unknown. We started the show off, though, with John Coltrane along with Miles Davis doing Sweet Sue, Just You, an alternate take. And then we heard Captain Beefheart on American Bandstand, 1966, calling in and answering some ladies' questions, and then they played Diddy Wah Diddy, which was his first single. Yeah, Dick Clark. You know, did you hear him speak? He was on one of them New Year's shows. Whoa. That was trippy. I mean, he had to get old sooner or later, right?
You know, finally all hit him at once, huh?
Yeah. Boy, it was like, whoa. Kind of well, it's a reality. So,
he was my boss once.
Yeah?
Yeah, I worked for him. I never actually saw him, but he owned the Transtar Radio Network when I worked there.
You never met him?
No.
You didn't, like, slam into him in the head or
something?
No, he
didn't hang out with the working people.
Right, you would meet some people by them coming in the head and you going out.
Yeah,
so.
I met Spencer Davis that way.
I thought you knocked... What was it, the Motley Crue thing?
Yeah, knocked a few folks down. Yeah. Celebrity knockdown list.
Surprise. you know, you're living in Pedro now. Last time you were guest on the show here, you weren't Pedro, you were Pico Rivera.
Pico Rivera, right.
So now...
Good to be back in the hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I like it. I get off at 3:00. Home early.
School. Where were you born?
San Pedro Peninsula Hospital.
You were born in this town. Because, God, for some reason I thought, well, your brother was born in Napa, and then there's a stay in Bakersfield.
Yeah, that happened.
But that's before you.
You know, I was a little kid, so I don't remember a whole lot.
What, you were born in Pedro, and then guys went back to Bakersfield?
Yeah, we went back to Bakersfield.
Okay.
And then we came
back to Pedro.
We came back to Pedro. Right.
Okay,
and then
I didn't
lived
know
up,
that.
We lived up in what, like where you, the new apartments were, where you guys, where the new apartments where you lived. There was like the old apartments, I guess, and they tore them down, and so we moved down the reservation to Battery Street. But we lived on a street called Walken Street.
Yeah.
And it was like the first street, the second street before you get to. Like Patone's Pizza that used to be there,
yeah.
Circus Donuts,
it's called
all that.
Park Western Plaza.
Yeah, Park Plaza. Yeah,
Park Plaza, I think, is in Monopoly game.
Oh, is yeah. Park Plaza? Yeah. Now it's Toronto, it's Tarragona Plaza or something like that now? Or?
I think it's still called Park Western, but that housing that went when you lived on Battery, that's when I knew you.
Right.
That's now Tarragona. Yeah, it's Tarragona. A track home.
Yeah, a little more chic.
Yeah. They didn't even
there's a secret there.
They didn't even keep those
there's
street
like bugs there, man, big time. So they probably burrowed in the ground.
They didn't.
I mean, it was places in
keep the street names. They went and changed yeah. everything.
Well, no, I think Battery Street. There's one.
No, Battery continues on, but not in Tarragona.
No, not up that way. Yeah, and then the same thing with
everywhere Channel. Where Tarragona is, it was renamed. Yeah. But if you go past east of Park Western,
yeah, it changes. Yeah, I mean, it's the same. Yeah,
Battery picks up again like it used to.
Right.
That was weird about that. Like, they wanted to try to obliterate any trace of the old days. But you're right, probably the little friends, the cucarachas.
Yeah. I'm sure they're there.
They're still.
Tough buggers.
And,
because that place
anyway,
is
so you are Pedro. Okay. I didn't know for
just
sure.
Down the street.
I thought maybe Bakersfield.
26, no. No. Oh, I thought you were born. Yeah, you're
because
okay.
You lived there twice, and then he ended up going back there again. Your pop liked Bakersfield.
I know, which is weird because he supposedly liked it because of the, you know, the air, you know, for his lungs. But I read just the other day that they have the worst air up there.
Well, the agriculture kind of the pesticide pollution. Yeah, but you know what I think though, it kind of reminded him probably more of Nebraska. Especially in those days, because Bakersfield more of a farm town. I mean, it's grown into a big city now, but in those days, especially, you probably remind him a little more back out on the plains for California.
Yeah.
You know, when you get into the San Joaquin Valley, it gets a little rural. Although some people have plans, they want to turn that into a huge track home. Yeah, I went. By Fresno and stuff, and what's the town there? Visalia?
Yeah.
Many track homes.
Wow.
Which I think may be kind of crazy because...
No, Bakersfield is pretty built up. I mean, when you drive
that's
the car,
I'm
it doesn't look like there's anything
but not
there,
in the
but
older days.
In.
Uh-huh. Not in the older days.
Yeah.
It's no, and so is this Visalia and stuff. And you would not believe it, where there was farmland and stuff is now track homes.
Right.
So...
Kind of going to be like the new Orange County. I used to just be Orange Fields back in the day.
That's right. Yeah. Right. California has always been strong agriculture, but like the image isn't. The image has always been, I guess, Hollywood and San Francisco. But the reality is, and I think it would be a mistake if it all turned, the whole state turned into a giant track home and we lost all the agriculture. Because it's kind of a core.
Nature would kick back.
Yeah, the nature of it and just even economics.
Yeah.
You can, you know, I mean, the state's got to have more than just rents and mortgages running it. You know, you've got to produce something. But anyway, that's my own stupid personal opinion. I can say that because I'm already here. And I'm not native. You are. Brother Matt is.
Native Pedro?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's Pedro too.
So. San Pedro Peninsula? Or?
I grew up all in Pedro, but I was born at Kaiser.
Oh, okay.
Harbor City.
Okay.
So next door, yeah. HC.
Yeah, 10 minutes past the border.
And stuff like Raul's like that. I think he was born at a Torrance hospital, but all Pedro. So. Beefheart. We should get to that point and not meander too far.
You guys remember the first time you heard him?
Oh, yeah. I was in high school. And, I thought it was really strange and wonderful. And the other guys in class did not think so. I remember. And having just to pipe down. The peer pressure was strong in the 70s. And I had just learned... If you like certain kinds of music, you just kept it to yourself because people would really put it on you for just being out. And I mean, later when punk came, it made sense in a way. It seemed like he was in his own universe. I also didn't know that much about the blues yet. Because actually, the universe was pretty well-rooted in much tradition. It wasn't so space-oriented, I think, as people kind of thought. Which was trippy, because we were just leaving the 60s and all this, you know, do your own thing. And then all this forcing to get orthodox and accommodate strong heterodox. Orthodox. Scary. Suffocating. But Joe found, at about this time, he tried to do an album called... Well, it ended up being called Shiny Beast, but at that time I think it was the Bat Chain Puller.
Yeah, it wasn't released, supposedly.
Yeah, well, he's working on it. Yeah, and then they wouldn't let it come out.
Right.
And it was kind of a nightmare for him. He had to go out and... he tried something with in England, a couple different kinds of bands, different style of record. He ended up touring with Frank Zappa, though, and stuff. Before the Shiny Beast finally did come out. But a lot of tracks didn't make it, and Joe found some, and we're going to play some of that stuff right now.
My eyes are burnt and bleeding, and all that looks like a monkey on a silver bar. Big poop hatch with a cotton hatch. Hatch holes that the light shows in and the light shows out. And the little red fence, and the wire and the wood, and the barbs and the berries, the tires and the bottles and the car up on rims. And the heat swims on its fenders, and the dust collects, and the rust of autumn surrenders into gold. Trumpet poop on the ground with peanuts. Its bell was blocking an ant's vision, and the mice played in its air holes and valves. A ladybug crawled off its mouthpiece, standing out red and blacked its wings and blew off to a flower. Its hum heard just above the ground. Black dots were hung in what turned out to be an olive tree that originally held a treehouse full of a building with one small window. Birds and broken glass and tiny bits of newspaper. My son is free from my window, said the god, the green dabbers. Rice wires, mouse tins, and milk muffins. Cereal and stone, matches, and mast and mace and clubs, and splintered shaft light intrigues a cricket on a dust-jeweled pinlet. Cobwebs collect down plaster, run into a hole and find collected glass that drinks the reflection of midday afternoon, midway between telegraph lines. A silver wing, a cloud, a rumbling of a cloud, a crowd of various violins strum from next door through my wall into my ear, obviously artificial. Neighbors laugh through sandwiches. Harlem babies, their stomachs explode into roars, their eyes shiny with starvation. Speckled hula dance on my phonograph. My door rattles windy. Sand wears my rug shoe and taps on the unheard finish of an hourglass I cannot hear. A typical musician's nest of thoughts filter through dust speakers. Why don't you go home? Oh, blobby, are you great? Exclaims two lips in some jumbled rock and roll tune, and wears a spot I cannot scratch. The surface of a friend, this high book a friend laid on me, on the couch relaxing in the corner behind a still life pond, with plenty of bugs and lily pads, slurred in mud banks and boulders, tin cans and raisins warped by thought, strain on the spoon like a wheat check. Check Biff cotton popping out of his sleeve. Poop hatch open. Big poop hatch with a cotton hatch. Hatch holes. Gotta pick up the horns, but the head won't move until it walks.
cloth popcorn balls. The walls, an old candy-striped sack. In the corner, wrinkled black and white. A table held up by legs. The peel-back red enamel mouth of linoleum screamed. At the pasteboard door, a knob rolled off in some corner sticky. A curtain blew into a sink. Dead flies and newspapers. Charred fire brown wings and toast. Oh boy, ain't been around for some time. The gate danced without its paint on. Odd jobs is written on. Spiders were the window's eyes. The sun made them look silver. The little girl from in back of the clothesline cast a shadow like a crow. Its beak spoke open. Why doesn't no lot jobs come around anymore? He used to ride his farmer heat bike, and his basket was a whole candy store. He used to make exits from door to door. All the women and the young girls around here ask why old jobs don't come around anymore. Why old odd jobs don't come on home. In the gate without his paint on dance. In creaks and moans. Here he comes pedaling up on his former heat bike. A bag of skin and bones. Folks were scraping two rust fenders.
Thousandth and tenth day of the human totem pole. The morning was distempered gray of the 1,010th day of the human totem pole. The man at the bottom was smiling. He had just finished his breakfast smiling. It hadn't rained or manured for over 2 hours. The man at the top was starved. The pole was a horrible-looking thing, with all those eyes and ears and waving hands for balance. There was no way to get a copter in close, so everybody was starving together. The man at the top had long ago given up, but didn't have nerve enough to climb down. At night, the pole would talk to itself, and the chatter wasn't too good. Obviously, the pole didn't like itself. It wanted to walk. It was the summer, and it was hot, and balance wouldn't permit a skinning to undergarments. It was an integrated pole. It was taking on a reddish-brown cast. Exercise on the pole was isometric, kind of a flex, then balance, then the eyes would roll together, the ears wiggle, hands balance. There was a gurgling and googling heard a tenth of the way up the pole. Approaching was a small child with Statue of Liberty doll.
Captain Beefheart there. First was Pooh Patch. Then we heard Odd Jobs. And finally, the 110th day of the Human Totem Pole. Now, this is all from the Bat Chain Puller collection Joe Boone came across. Stuff that never got out in this form. These tunes showed up other places. But this is the real thing. You know, Cap Beefheart, I got the bone phone. It's okay, brother. He was a guy, not just with record companies, but with his own band. He was a man who had a vision. And he's going to talk about it in his own words here because of, I got some interviews from 1972 and 1973 in England. In fact, one of them is with John Peel, who was an incredible cat. You know about him?
Oh, yeah.
He was a DJ. And I got to meet him and talk to him about T-Rex, Mark Bowen.
Oh, wow.
In the studio. When I was with Jay Masks in the Fog, it was one of those Peel session things. And he actually was there. He rarely was at those things, but he was there. And I got to talk to him. It was kind of a tragic story about how after a while Mark Bolan wouldn't return his calls or take his calls.
Wow.
Yeah. You could tell in his voice he was kind of hurt. But John Peel, great cat, and he talks to Captain. But first there's Andy Hall. And we'll let the Captain speak in his own words about himself.
You have a good comment about Andy Warhol, the soothsaying bird, right? How's England? You're going to be over here for how long?
I think a month.
Right. And we'll be getting your concerts, the details of those, and the What's On Spot, which comes directly afterwards. But are you going to be doing anything while you're over here other than just playing? Are you going to be meeting anybody? Or you were saying that you've been stuck in your hotel room most of the time.
Well, I just got off that plane. I'd been painting before I left, so I'd been up for 4 days. But I managed to get a 4-hour sleep outside of the hotel. It sounded like one of those, you know what a tether ball is?
No.
It's over there, they have this thing, it's a pole, and they hit the ball. It's one ball that goes around and around as they hit it. And it sounded like a tether ball out on a parking lot on Saturday when school's out or something, pinging back and forth. It was like some kind of torture.
Before we get on to our side of the defense record, we were having a conversation some time ago about Andy Warhol and about, if I remember right, you were saying, I think part of this is going to be the Melody Maker next week, but I think you were saying that Andy Warhol, it kind of hypes things up, suits things up, as you said, and because of that, a lot of good artists, a lot of good things are getting overlooked in America.
Well, as far as it was.
Okay, I'll give you a few examples,
And a lot of other people that nobody's even heard of. Arnett Coleman, that didn't help him, I don't think.
All right, we've actually, there's a new Arnett Coleman LP just out over here, which I've got to play for
science fiction.
I think that must have been you on the States.
I saw him before I left in the airport,
Are you very keen on that? You're very keen on that kind of jazz, I suppose.
Well, I don't think he's playing jazz. I think the drummer and the bass player are playing jazz, but I don't think he ever has been.
I mean, how do you relate him to your own music, if at all?
Not at all, but that's probably why I like him so much.
Yeah.
I mean, musically.
Let's start right at the beginning of your career, and way back. Faces Milk, Electricity. Electricity by Captain Beefheart, who's with me here in the studio. I got to spring this one on you. When,
bring it.
Here we come. When I said to the lady who helps me out there in the studio that we've got Captain Beefheart on the program tonight, she said, who exactly is Captain Beefheart? Well, I think she meant what your real name is. Have you got any answer to that?
Dan Fleet.
Right, well, that's your name.
That's it.
No more quick personal
idea. Her name is Jenny.
Right, you've got it. You've got it. I thought you were going to bring out something surprising, but I'll leave it at that.
No, I'm not that weird. No, I'm just kidding.
Electricity was your first album to be released over here, at least, from Faces Milk, right?
Yeah, that, I don't know. A minute ago I heard that A&M put some stuff out of Who Do You Think You're Fooling out of the frying pan into the fire. Before that, well, that's the first album, yeah.
When that album came out, and when you first came to England, those were the days, it must have been about 66 or 67, I should think.
66, I think.
Yeah, just before Flower Power and so on, which was significant.
Oh, yeah.
Right, I mean, before Haight Ashbury and so on. You were one of the, I should think, the two or three main groups in Britain, or to come to Britain, who were identified with a kind of psychedelic Flower Power kind of movement. Down in the Middle Earth, John Peel used to have you on there a lot.
Nice man.
Right. Do you look back upon those days with regret?
Not really, never.
I mean, regret that they passed?
Not particularly, other than the fact that things have become so... I don't know how to explain it. So things that now, it's like one big thing of dough with a flower stuck in it now. To me, in a lot of ways, you know, not some of the people, of course, you know, but flower power in the first place, I mean, the idea, but for a better evolution, we could have been picked. I don't like the idea of picking flowers. I thought it was corny, really. I like them where they grow, not picked and waved in the air like that. I don't like that.
You came, if, as we said, you came...
They weren't really doing that here, were they?
Not so much. That was
more over there.
But, I mean, you tend to get the dregs of that kind of movement over here. You know, it manifests, if it's a good movement in the States, and if it's a bad movement, it tends to manifest itself, I think, in a more diluted form.
Too bad they do that here. They shouldn't do that.
As you came, like we said, just before the whole Flower Power thing, did you feel in any way that was ripping off or adulterating something that you'd got going beforehand?
Well, definitely. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I remember you talking before about also that you felt you'd been slightly ripped off by at least one well-known artist. I mean,
I'm not saying I wouldn't really say that he's an artist, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, well, we're talking about Frank Zappa. Right? Yeah. We were not going to libel him. We might go into it any more than that. But yeah. You seem to feel a lot of your own material hasn't got to the public that it should have done.
Well, I don't. I think that it was posed as more of a freak show rather than just art. And I didn't want anybody to take hard narcotics just to listen to me because of the fact that I don't take them, and nobody in the group does. And being a selfish artist, I wanted people to hear it the way I thought of it, which was without any narcotics at all or anything like that.
Yeah, can you clear up your attitude to drugs a bit further? Two examples, one title track, I Feel Like Acid, and I think in the Rolling Stone...
You said. Not acid.
Acid. A-H-C-I-D.
Acid.
Right.
Yeah. Texas, I guess.
One of my favorite interview quotes of all time, if I've got it right, in the Rolling Stone, your interviewer asked you, why you had this big thing about drugs, at least in your music.
Big thing.
Yeah, and I'm told that you said, well, I've only been down once in the last 2 years, and now you people are really brave. Can you clear up about your attitude to drugs in that area? I mean, is that a true remark? For
that? Say that one more time.
The interviewer asked you what your attitude was to drugs, and you said, well, I've only been down...
Oh, I mean, drugs make you down. I mean, how can... It's obvious, ingesting poison. Right out front, well, why ingest poison? That's the opposite of what I think that the people are really looking for, I hope.
You don't think that you've always been... Your image, at least, has always been tied up with acid rock? Or whatever, or that people have always associated you with something to do with the drug culture.
I may be naive, but I didn't think so. I may be. I mean, I just put my paw out in a time that was that way, I think, don't you?
Yeah, you mean it was just, in a sense, it was something other than drugs that was just happening at that time.
The times.
How have they changed, though? I mean, how do you feel that your music still relates to people at the moment? Because, you know, when you started, at least in England, you were in a very specific context, you know, things were happening that you were really right at the head of. Nowadays, that's not so true. Does that worry you? I mean, how do you operate musically?
Well, I've never even thought about anything like that, really, frankly. I haven't ever worn a watch or read a book.
So to you, it's just a matter of picking up your guitar and playing?
Not my guitar. Yes.
The album that you've been putting together at the moment. We've got one in the studio. It's the last one. You've been working on one since that.
The Spotlight came right. As opposed to the new one.
Well, yeah, if you tell us a bit about both of them.
Well, I don't know what to say about it other than the fact that I wrote most of the stuff on the Spotlight Kid on a harmonica as opposed to a piano. That's about the only difference I can. And the feeling, I like the feeling a lot better. But I have a new engineer now, a fellow named Ted Templeman, that I think is going to be a lot better because he doesn't think I'm so weird. I have a lot of trouble with that. Yeah, I do have a lot of, going back to what you were saying, I do have a lot of trouble with that. They can't believe that my imagination is just an imagination, unaltered. Which is funny to me. I mean, it's really funny. I mean, there's been a lot of painters throughout history.
You mean you don't want people to think that you're weird?
Well, I don't mind what they think. It's just that I don't want them to connect my imagination to poison.
Coming back to that,
you like
that? I'm not sure if they do, really. I think it's unfair.
Well, I think some people do, but...
Yeah.
Mainly the people in the record business rather than the audience.
Just to tell a little bit off that. The last album which was released over here, The Spotlight Kid, title track is Captain Beefheart's last album to be released in this country. And Captain Beefheart, of course, is Dawn Van Vliet, who's with me in the studio at the moment. Can you tell us a little bit about the album that you've just made in the States after this one that's coming out over here in the near future?
Well, I haven't recorded it yet, but I have a lot of things planned. I wrote this album on the way to Yale from Boston in a car.
The whole album?
Yeah. So the name of it is Brown Star, and let me think of one of the tunes is named Knock Knock Rock Rock, and one of them is named Spitball Scalp Baby. And it's very heavy, it's a very dense feeling, this album, as opposed to Trout Mask Replica or something like that. There's a wider area.
Your present band has two lead guitars, doesn't it?
Have a fellow named Wingdale Fingerling on guitar, Zuthor Rolo on another guitar, and now Rocket Morton, the bass player, has gone over on the guitar. And I have a fellow named Ori Horn on bass.
When we were talking before, you said that having two guitars was like having two snakes facing your way.
Yeah, because of the, But I like that. And now I have three.
Three.
At once, yeah.
And that's from the band that's going to be playing in London?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Right, well, the concept from the Albert Hall, and more about that in the What's Wrong spot in just a minute. Sounds like Captain Beefheart, thanks a lot for coming into the studio.
Thank you very much.
You're racing off to the Old Grey Whistle Test, where you can actually see the Captain live on the TV in about 1.5 hours from now. So I'll let you get off of that, and best of luck with the concert.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for coming in.
Well, know that I'm the worst interviewer in the world, so I'm not going to do like an interview, but he is going to make his noise. Let's have your noise first. That's very good. I'm most impressed with that, because all I can do is... Which is, you can't do that, right? Can you do that?
I can do that.
That's pretty good. You got this
start a group.
We could very easily. It's on my next LP, that, in fact. It's kind of boring after when you get to the second side, because there's not much else I can do. These books that you do anyway, because you always have like a notebook with lots of drawings and things in it. How many of these do you fill up? How many of these do you do a day?
Well, I do that one a day.
The whole book?
I've been known to do as much as three.
Right, so the other day, When we were having coffee, Susan Nolo said that you got... you've got something like 55...
novels.
55 full-length novels. And are they ever going to get published?
Oh, yes. I'm going to... Well, that's one reason why I'm over here. Other than to play music, I'm over here to find a publisher for, you know, over here.
He's going to publish all 55 at once.
I don't think they'll do that.
But if you've written 55, how long does it take you to write one?
Not very long. I've many times written a book a night.
A book a night?
Yeah. The Book a Night Club.
What about he was also saying that you got like thousands of other songs on tapes. And I remember the last time you were here when I had more time to drift around and watch what you were doing. You used to say, every time I saw you, you'd say, what about this? I've just written this new song. And you'd write a new song about every 5 minutes. And you're still writing that many songs.
Oh, yeah. Today I must have done at least 20.
And are any of them going to get recorded, do you think?
Oh, yeah. I have done a few, especially over here, that I know I'm going to record.
Yeah?
Because I like the idea of no guns. It makes me feel a lot freer. It relieves that pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of scary to think you could walk out of a studio into another studio with John Wayne and... you know what I mean? Not John Wayne, but John Wayne.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a lot of...
I'd be glad when John Wayne's...
Have you been to Belgium? Have you done any gigs in Belgium? Because there the police have machine guns.
I know, yeah. I did one over there, but I told them before I went on that they'd have to lead in all their barrels.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, let's see. Are you going to play some harmonica for us? Because you said you might.
Sure.
Okay. Let me
find the right key here. Oh, I'll just grab it.
Because when I spoke to you last week, you said you were going to come down to the BBC and sing Easter Parade. And I know Easter's over, but are you going to sing Easter Parade? Or do you not remember the words? I don't remember the words.
You know what? I don't remember the words.
But... Okay. Well, we'll play another record now then and try and remember the words of Easter Parade. These are the Beach Boys. In fact, the interesting things, what always happens when you've got somebody in the studio, is that the things you talk about off the air are really much more interesting than things that you talk about on the air. Because that's right, though, isn't
it? I know, I'm sure.
Because I always feel, even before, I've been doing radio programs for 9 years, and I'm always still nervous before I do a program and before I start talking, because there's like an audience out there, you, in fact, that we can't see. And it makes you nervous too, doesn't it?
Sure it does. Your own imagination imagines people out there, and,
right.
and they certainly aren't as nice as the real people that are out there.
No, that's
and,
right.
And it can scare you.
I got a lot of very nice letters that make you think, well, okay, it's worth carrying on. But then you get a lot of very strange letters too. I mean, you must attract more strange letters than any other man in the world, I think.
You know, I don't say Liberace attracts more, but the thing is that I do run a close second. Right. I'm sure.
Well, being second to Liberace is pretty good, I'd say. I wouldn't mind being second to Liberace in anything. But do you find that people take lines out of your songs? And I mean, I think a lot of people miss the point that a lot of what you write is funny. Do you know what I mean? Like, people take it very seriously.
Oh, they do.
Very academic about it.
And put their whole life, like you were saying, build their whole life around it. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. I write something in 5 minutes, and the next thing is turned into a whole essay or something
right.
like that about it. But I'm just joking, you know, like, mainly humor is the whole thing that I've been doing, and everybody thinks I'm a real heavyweight.
Right. Well, I found it. Like the first time you came over here, and that was what, about 1968, 69, and I hired a little car and I used to drive you to all of those gigs. And I was really frightened. I was really frightened of you then.
Oh, stop.
No, that's right, because I thought, now this guy is really weird, and he's going to say and do things that I don't understand, you know, and that I'm going to have to try and keep up with him. And it's only really the last couple of times you've been here that I've found out that you're just. I mean, you talk about cars, you know, that's all right.
I'm absolutely normal.
Yeah,
I've got a 72 Stingray. I have a wife.
Right.
I'm far out enough to enjoy the sex opposite from me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's far out.
That's
people nowadays.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, I throw pretty fire into the fireplace, you know, and... I don't roast, I roast brown sugar marshmallows.
Yeah.
That's for all organic.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Better have another record. Here's Bob Dylan.
She's got everything she needs.
Like that?
Oh, yeah, man, there's timing, you know, like, not quite Muhammad Ali, but nice.
You like, yeah, that's funny, you said, because I mentioned that on the radio about Muhammad Ali. What do you think about Muhammad Ali?
I think that he's done more for music than anybody of his time.
And do you send him all of your records?
Oh, yeah.
But he's never acknowledged it.
Well, you know, like, I do it through the record company.
Yeah.
That may be why he hasn't acknowledged.
Could easily be, knowing record company.
I can't afford the postage. No, I'm kidding. I can. And I would do that, but it's, you know, like, I live way up in Northern California.
Yeah.
And they say they live in Burbank.
Right.
And,
yeah. So you admire Muhammad Ali, but
oh,
wait,
yeah.
Who else?
John Lee Hooker, for sure, and Lightning Slam. You.
That's very good of you.
Always have. Even when I was crazy, I knew I loved it. When I was seven personalities for myself.
I remember that. That was the first time you came over. The first gig I took you to was in Kidderminster. I don't know if you know that.
Of course I remember that.
That's right. Sure. It was Frank Freeman's dancing school.
Yeah, and I remember Frank Freeman.
That's right.
I remember also trying to find a pair of those corduroys.
Yeah.
And I remember meeting that fellow on the street with that great accent.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I don't remember that.
And I remember your car, you know, like almost getting a flat.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I wasn't that crazy, Andrew.
No, you weren't. You weren't that crazy. Are you going to come again next year? Because, I mean, it's... you come the last couple of years. You gonna
sure.
Come?
Sure. Now that I have sort of taken over the steering wheel, I'm going to be able to come over here whenever I like. Like, I used to try to see if I couldn't get the record company to do something, but now I realize that they've already done something.
Yeah.
And they didn't do what I wanted them to.
Where else? Let's have a look and just see where else you've got to go. What's the day today? It's the, what is it today? The 20, is it the 24th?
It's the day after the colored egg.
That's right. I have purple eggs myself. Very handsome pair of eggs. So tomorrow you're Bradford.
Now, that's yeah,
a good,
that girl.
That's a good town, Bradford. You'll like Bradford. Then Thursday's Wolverhampton, Friday Preston. Saturday, Newcastle. Now, there's another good town.
I like that one.
Yeah, because you did a good one in Newcastle last time. Then Monday the 30th, Nottingham. And then in May. You've got a lot more to do. You know?
I had to buy off the sheriff or whatever the last time I played it.
That's right. Then on the 1st of May, which is a Tuesday. In fact, it's next week. Leicester University. Then Wednesday, it's Leeds University. Thursday, Oxford.
They better not analyze me.
No, we better not.
No, they better not. You know what I mean? Like at those universities.
Yeah, that's... Well, you get a lot of that. You get people coming up to you and saying, this big-eyed beans from Vegas. I see this as being a message. They're trying to explain to mankind the problems. And they'll do that, you know.
I know, and I'll tell them...
what will you tell them?
Be kind, man. Don't be mankind.
Okay, let's have another record. Oh, that's the wrong microphone. Let's get another record on it. That's one of my all-time favourites, that, actually, from the Big Three, who recently reformed in one way or another. And that was just the B-side of a single they did. And the A-side was If You Ever Change Your Mind, and that was You've Got to Keep It Under Hand. A bit scratched, because it's been played a lot. But you like that, eh?
I like the guitar, the way he held the note so long.
That's really good. I can't even remember what the name of the guitarist was. Doubtless people will write in and tell
me. Good guitarist.
Yeah. Did you like that better than... Because you heard Little Jimmy Page earlier on. Did you prefer that? Or what did you think about that?
Well, I'd actually prefer the guitar on this, you know, because I can't see any reason to go through all of those Jungle Jim theatrics. I mean, the intellectualism on an instrument that... can never possibly be mastered or played anyway, because you have to have six fingers. There's very few people with six fingers.
That's not all that, man.
So why not just play what feels good?
That's right, because people feel that playing stuff that's complicated is better than playing stuff that's good.
Recently, my group has gotten out of that.
Yeah.
Now, it took me 7 years to get a group that didn't want to be complicated.
Yeah, who's in the group of them? Because people want, not everybody will be able to see the band on the tour. So.
Well, Alex Guitar St. Clair came back, who was on Safe as Milk. Zoot Horn Rollo is on guitar. Rockette Morton on bass and guitar. And Ed Marimba on drums. And Odie Horn on bass. And occasionally I'm there, too.
Yeah, you occasionally pop in from time to time. Hi there, everybody. Great to be with you this evening. Got a knockout show. Anyway, but it's a good band, isn't it? And it's you're enjoying it more now.
Right? Oh, they're very good. I mean, they're not only that, but they're good people. I mean, they look eye to eye to the audience. They don't try to come down with sparkling... glitter hoists or any kind of nonsense like that. I mean, they're right there on the floor being what they can be, which is a human being that's trapped by gravity, and there's no way to get away from it. I don't care how big you blow your head up or what you do, you're going to always put your foot back down, you know, and you may as well leave it there, you know, and play.
Oh. Well, they're a good band, and I'm glad you could come this evening, and I wish we could have talked a bit more, because but maybe people will get the idea that you're just a nice bloke and not all that weird after
all. No. Well, listen, I enjoyed it too. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. That was Cap Beefheart talking with John Peel in 1973, and before that was Cap Beefheart talking with Andy Hall, 1972. When did you first hear Cap Beefheart, Joe?
I think it was at Todd's. Yeah, it was at Todd's house, most definitely.
Todd Apperson. For you people who might not be familiar. Todd Apperson was a cat that went to high school with Joe Boone.
Yeah. And it was Trout Mask Replica.
And we were talking about Todd and his sister, who, because we didn't really have people older than us. I mean, I'm a couple years older than Joe Boone, but I couldn't help him because I was just as ignorant. We didn't have people to kind of guide us. I did remember a couple guys like Dennis Alba, turning me on to Black Sabbath, and Ray Bernard turning me on to Blue Oyster Cult. Those are two Pedro guys that were a year or two older than me. But a lot of this stuff we just stumbled upon. So Todd Apperson was ahead of the curve on a lot of stuff that wasn't, you know, on the mainstream and a little bent on the edges. I mean, it would be nothing considered nowadays where you have independent stuff and all that, but it was hard to know. Outside of Grand Funk and whoever was Mega Monster bands at the time.
In concert, the TV show.
Yeah, but even those shows sometimes would have little bands. Like, I remember the incredible Alex Harvey band.
Right.
And you talk to dudes at school, they know who the hell he was. So, but you could see there. And sometimes not even a lot of information. They just let him play, and you wouldn't know anything about him. You wouldn't know the names of the songs or... I remember that's how we got turned on to Kiss. They just came on, and we didn't know what the fuck it was.
We would record in concert on these little mono tape recorders.
From the TV.
We put it in front of the TV, and that would be like totally into it.
I listened to that at work.
No, yeah, and then we would try to learn the songs. That's how we learned like the first Those first three
before
Kiss
they
songs.
Even had an album out, we didn't even know the names of the song. Yeah. Okay, we're at the end of the first hour, January 2nd, 2011. First What for Beatles Show of the Year show. So hang tight for hour two. January 2nd, 2011. It's the second hour of the What from Pedro show.
For the last 15 years, my next guest has been making music that sounds like no one else's in the world, and he is... I wonder if they have a Captain Beefheart sandwich. Well, we'll find out. He has acquired a fiercely devoted following among critics and fans. This is his most recent album right here, Ice Cream for Crow. Please welcome Don Van Vliet, Captain Beefheart, ladies and gentlemen. Good. Thank you very much, and have a seat there, if you will.
Thank you.
You brought a little
water.
Refreshment along?
Yeah,
got some water?
Just water.
Would you like a glass for that?
No, but the war is a pimple on a pup's pet dragon. What did I mean?
No, that's all right. Go ahead. Before you came out, I was looking at your album. Let me ask you one question about this gentleman here on the back, a picture of obviously a guy who performed on the album.
Yeah.
Richard Midnight Hat Size Snyder.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Now I know that I know that you.
No other guests, right?
I don't know.
Well, anyway,
it's been rather peculiar. Now, I know that you sometimes give musicians names.
I had to in this case, Snyder. I mean, I had to give him Midnight Hat Size because we got him that hat. I didn't put those bow ties on the front and the back, black one and the white one. No, it looked better. That red derby didn't make it without the.
Uh-huh.
But he's a Winnebago Sioux Indian.
Mm-hmm. So Midnight Hat Size. That's a very unusual.
He needed a hat. They called my manager Gary Lucas, who was also on the album, and called him in the middle of the night. Said he wore a size 8 hat.
Yeah.
Now that's impossible.
It is impossible. That's a pretty big hat, isn't it?
It's possible. Yeah. It's impossible in this case.
Well. What size hat does he wear?
7 3/8.
Oh, good.
Which ain't bad.
Yeah.
But not an 8.
No, not an 8, sure. If you're just joining us, we're talking about hat sizes. And Now, you have an interesting name yourself. Can you tell us a little of the origin of Captain Beefheart?
Captain Beefheart, a beef in my heart against the society.
Mm-hmm.
They're cutting the beaks off of penguins down at the marina in L.A. You know that, the water. Cutting the beaks off pelicans. Cutting the beaks off the top beak.
I know, yeah. But why are they doing that?
I don't know, but I sure would like to find who's doing that.
Well, that's...
They need a spanking.
Well, it's cruel. If in fact that's the case, that seems like it might be cruel.
Right.
No. Now, let's talk about your music. You were the first person to actually record a video, right?
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
I think that was about 72.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of the song for which you recorded it?
Lick My Decals Off, Baby.
Lick
Meaning get rid of the labels, Children Coming.
Lick My Decals
Off. Not nasty things like they thought.
Yeah. Now this...
That's a nasty thing.
you were ahead of the rest of the music world, and this video is now in a museum, isn't it?
Yeah, modern art, yeah.
Yeah.
M-O-M-A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we...
I think that's it. Mom's Museum of Modern Art.
Yeah. Now we have a more current video from.
I just wait.
We're going to do
mother.
That. Okay, that's right.
And my wife.
All right, we're going to pause here. We'll be back with Captain Beefheart and many more hat sizes. So come on back. Hi, welcome back. Captain Beefheart, and you were talking about Will Lee, our bass player.
He's good. Knockout. You're good.
Steve Jordan, our drummer.
Yeah, you're
Hiram
good.
Hiram Bullock, guitar. Paul Schaefer, our director. Now, hello. Captain, if do I call you Captain or Don?
Don.
Don, fine, okay. Yeah. We're going to look at your current video. Tell us about that. This is from Ice Cream for the Crow?
Ice Cream for a Crow.
Yeah. What does that mean exactly, that title?
It has a lot to do with Ray Gun. Saddle Slopes his hair and tosses jelly beans through rope tricks. He's a bad actor. No, what it has to do with what it has to do with black and white and a raven, vanilla ice cream.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and we're gonna look at the video now. Is there anything you want to explain about the clip from the?
I'd like to say that I really appreciate you showing this because what is the MTV? I don't want my MTV if you don't want my video.
They have not.
They won't show it.
Yeah. Well, it's too bad. It's their loss.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. here now a minute or so of Ice Cream for Crow. Captain Beefheart. Watch the monitors.
It's so hot. Looks like you have 3 weeks cold. The moon's so full. Why? It's all a pumpkin. You know there's something. The moon was a stone swole. Stop the show. I need to say hello to the crow. Like the fire piano. The moon showed up and it started the show. Tonight there'll be ice cream. Ice cream for crow.
That was appeared to be shot in the desert, and you live in the desert, don't you?
After a fashion, it was 114 the day we shot that. It was that hot.
Yeah.
It's so hot. It was that hot.
Yeah. Do you like living in the desert?
No.
Really?
I'm gonna move to Arizona. It's hotter.
You've lived there quite a while, though, haven't you? You and your wife live there?
Yeah, in a trailer out in, way out in the high Mojave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty nice. I mean, the ravens for neighbors.
Mm-hmm. But you don't like it, but yet you don't leave.
I love the tension, discipline.
Oh.
It's good for painting. I'm a painter.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Is it true that you once managed a Kinney shoe store?
Yeah, the funny part about that is I managed this shoe store, and I quit on Christmas Eve, and I went down to Warner Brothers. I got signed to Warner Brothers. It's also Kinney's. So I walked out of one shoe store into another.
We're going to pause here. We'll continue with Don Van Vliet, Captain Beefheart, right after we watch this. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
You have a lot of, we know that a lot of people requested special tickets to be here tonight to see you. They really enjoy you and your work.
Thank you.
Do you always have the hat on?
Not now.
No, that's...
Yeah, I do. No. No, well said. No, I take it off quite a bit.
Yeah. About what percent of your life are you without a hat, do you think?
Well, I don't shower with it.
Yeah.
I don't shave with it.
So there you go.
Yeah.
All right, good. Now, you, I was reading about you this afternoon, and a staggering bit of information about your life hit me. That you, it has to do with your early schooling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And and I tell you what we're going to do. We have to go away for station identification. But when we come back, I want you to tell us about your school experience, and we'll get to the bottom of that, all right?
You want to be a different fish, you're going to jump out of the school.
That's right. That's right. All right. Now, we'll be right back after station identification. also known as Captain Beefheart. Tell me about your early schooling. Is it true what I read?
Half a day of kindergarten.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had somebody tell me that I stayed too long.
Was this the extent of your formal education?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what went wrong there?
I was a sculptor, and I...
At a very early age,
obviously. Yeah, real young. It didn't apply.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good for some people, but it wasn't good for me.
So instead of going kindergarten grades 1 through 8, high school and so on and so forth, what did you do?
Outsmarted the truant officers.
Yeah. And you worked on your sculpture.
Yeah.
Now, I also read that you were isolated in a room.
Oh, I just went in the room and sculpted, and they had to feed me under the door. How would you like to have a child like that?
Now, wait a minute. You were just in this room by yourself sculpting.
Yeah.
And periodically, Mom and Dad would slide food under the door?
Oh, yeah. And if I liked it, I'd eat it. If I didn't like it, I'd throw it out.
Yeah. That's an abnormal upbringing, isn't it?
Yeah, I had them trained.
Mm-hmm.
I was an only child, you know. They thought I was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'd let me do what I wanted.
But you were kind of a prodigy, because you received a scholarship to go study art where?
From Knudsen Creamery, the millionaires, the milk millionaires.
Oh, sure, out in the West.
Yeah.
Sure.
She said she was going to give me a 6-year paid tuition. Paid tuition? Paid tuition. Ooh. Paid tuition. I'm nervous.
No, you're not nervous.
No. No, paid tuition scholarship to Europe.
Right.
My folks moved, when I was 13, my folks moved me to Mojave, the desert where they kept the Oriental Americans prisoner during World War II. I mean, I was out there in that.
No, they didn't want you
to get me away from art.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Why didn't they want you to be in art?
I don't think they understood it.
Mm-hmm. But do you ever regret being deprived of that opportunity?
Not really, because I wouldn't have let anybody tell me something to do anyway.
Yeah, but a 13-year-old kid going to, was it Italy to study?
Marble. Yeah,
oh, that's your major league sculpturing.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, you've lived in the desert pretty much ever since, haven't you?
Well, no, I've been in Northern California, mm-hmm. and then I came back to the desert, and I went back to Northern California, back to the desert. I was touring quite a bit, and I wasn't in the desert that
mm-hmm.
much.
Yeah, but you live there now.
Yeah, but I'm going to go to Arizona, as I said last time, because it's hotter.
And do you like the desert?
Should I tell you the truth? I like the desert, but I can't go out in the sun.
Yeah.
My skin won't take it. So I'm just saying that so that people don't know that I'm really not going to be in Arizona or up where I am now. I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah.
Fooling them.
So you don't want
to... in case somebody cares and comes...
Mm-hmm. You don't want to be easy to get a hold of, I guess, huh?
Reckless.
Reckless, yeah. Yeah. Now, do you live in a trailer in the desert?
Oh, yes, and it's hot.
Yeah. Now, what is it like when you come to New York, Don? Do you enjoy the city?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
What's your favorite part?
The museums.
Museums?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have many of those in where you're.
No.
They're in the desert. Yeah. Now we have some of your artwork, one of which is right here on the cover of the magazine Conjunctions. And if you can just take a look at the monitor, and we're going to show. Well, I guess we got about a half a dozen of your paintings here, Don. Now, when you're in music, you're Captain Beefheart, right? As an artist, you're Don Van Vliet,
yes.
And a poet and a writer.
Yeah.
All right. What is this, Don?
B-top.
B-top. And what? What is that? What did you do that in, oil or?
Acrylic and pencil, and cigarette ashes,
mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Okay.
That's about it.
All right. All right, the next one.
Oh, that's The Corn Thief.
Yeah. These are very nice. These are yeah. All right, and do we have?
And that is a button-down fashion bow.
What does that mean exactly?
Exactly. I don't know.
It's not exactly. Don't want to.
I had fun
one.
Doing it though. I was able to turn myself inside out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's all I'm trying to do.
Well, that's very impressive. But that's very impressive stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, are these on exhibit anywhere or for sale anywhere?
I'm going to do that soon.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm painting for an exhibit in New York.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand also that your voice has an incredible octave range. Is that how they describe it? And you can actually break glasses with your voice.
Oh, yes. I wish I had enough money to use my voice around the house. I mean, but I don't want to break any glass.
Now, it goes...
Seven.
Can you give us an example of how low you can get it? Is that what we're talking about here, low and high? Is that...
Yeah.
All right, now can you go the other way?
No, well, I can't, you know, I mean... I'd have to have a bongo or something.
A bongo. No, but you actually have broken...
Yeah. Why don't they let me do a Memorex commercial?
You could do that.
But I can afford to break a few glasses.
Yeah. What are you... Now, you're a multi-talented artist. Music, painting, sculpting, writing. What are you doing next? What's the next project for you?
Having this exhibit in New York.
Yeah.
But
did you mention the museum where this is? Or the gallery?
I can't. I'm not at liberty to mention where it's going to be yet until everything is set up.
Okay. But that's in the near future.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you for
being
here.
Thank you for showing this.
Oh, place. Sure. Yeah, nice to see you again, John. Thank you for
nice
coming out of the
you.
Desert.
Live from Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with a couple of more spiels. Captain Beefheart on Captain Beefheart in his own words, this time via David Letterman's show. First on the bone phone again.
Hotline today.
First one was 1982, and then the second one was year later, which is kind of like right before. It must have been a hot call because Brother Matt just dumped all his shit. The second interview there is right before he quits music. After I stream for Crow. We got some more interviews where he talks about this. But he hung his hat up on the music and put on his painter smock. And he loved it. You know, so... I think it bums some people out. You'll see in the third hour, I'll play a spiel where people are calling up and they... even a blind cat calls up and says, how am I going to... He goes, well, I'll make a kind of a braille painting. Sculpture, actually, when he was young, he was going to go to Italy to be a sculptor. Yeah. But then his family moved to the desert and he got into music, got into the blues. Time now for the spin cycle, Brother Matt.
Cool.
And he's gonna collaborate here with Mr. Joe Boone on the bongos.
Yeah.
Thank you. Brother Matt?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you, Joel.
Yeah, what was
thank you.
Some of your motivation, inspiration?
Well, just wanted to get back to some of that dubby stuff that I've been kind of playing more since I stunk it up so much last week. I figured I'd get back to some familiar ground.
Okay, I got this. Do you remember L.A. Eyewitness? They would do stories on things happening in L.A. And Captain Beefheart was on one.
Oh, cool.
And I've got the same. I think it's from 1982. Around cool. The ice cream for crow thing.
Cool.
Some of the most original music this side of Venus. This man's music. He's been called the father of the new wave, one of the most important American composers of the last 50 years, a primitive genius. Don't know who he is? You're not alone. In 15 years, he's never really had a hit record. He lives reclusively in a trailer somewhere in the Mojave Desert. His name is Don Van Vliet, and he dedicates his music to animals and children. The world knows him as Captain Beefheart.
Ah, now there's a woman's got a hole off and hit a man to make him know she's there.
Back in 1956.
56?
Yeah, oh, that was a good year. Do you remember?
I remember that very well. It was in high school.
That was a good one.
Yeah, wasn't
that? I never went to school. Ever? Ever, even kindergarten.
Are you serious?
That's
no education at all?
None, no.
Why not? Aren't kids supposed to go to school?
They're supposed to. But if you want to, I'm still a kid. You say, I didn't go to school, I'm still a kid. If you want to be a different fish, you got to jump out of the school.
I think the Beefheart's way of approaching words, of approaching sounds, of approaching instruments is very much that of a child at play. At a very young age, he decided, in effect, not to grow up. So he has this kind of diffuse, undifferentiated consciousness that children have, that mystics have, that great artists have. Contemporary American listeners have gotten used to a steady beat, a regular chord changes, a sweet melody. What Beefheart tries to do is to shake us out of that.
Done. Rock and roll is a fixation that bom, 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 mama heartbeat. I don't like hypnotics. You say, I mean, I'm doing a non-hypnotic music to break up the catatonic state. And I think there is one right now. That they brought me down here, and as soon as the car door opened, I ran out, you know, to go down and see an actual dinosaur. Maybe a dire wolf or a saber-toothed tiger, even, if I could get it on the way down. I want to actually see one, and I try to go in there. This is the big dig, and it gives Los Angeles a lot of credence.
How do you teach these musicians to play your music?
Tape, you know, with the piano, a tape, and it's very hard work, and they probably all leave after I say this, but they don't get enough money.
What if they ad-lib musically? What if they want to put in a little bit of their own?
Ouch!
See, it's you.
Me. I'm an only child. I'm a tyrant.
You're
irascible.
What groups like the B-52s, Blondie, Public Image Limited, and others have taken from Captain Beefheart is a very specific way of playing the guitars, playing drums, and structuring melodies.
They're taking your music, incorporating your music into their ideas, and it's making them a lot of money.
And they ought to give me some of that
money. That's right.
And they should give me some of that money. Now, everybody that you mentioned, I want my money. Pip, pip, pip.
In plain view, it's Captain Beefheart.
Captain, don't you want to make money?
Sure.
Then why don't you go commercial?
I think either I'm too smart or too dumb. I don't know which.
Well, maybe the captain did go commercial. Sort of. In his 1971 TV spot, he wrote and directed. But it was banned by a local station.
New on Reprise. It's Lick My Decals Off Baby.
Lick My Decals Off Baby? What I meant was get rid of the labels Coming Children. Music, hard to talk about. I did a painting of my wife, and I obviously that's me because you can tell by the big ears.
What's the most important thing in your life? You've mentioned ecology, you've mentioned animals, you've mentioned the music, you've mentioned what's really important to you right now. What's the most important thing to you?
My wife, definitely. That is the most important thing to me. Sorry, girls. Take it.
There's one man. Whoa, yeah, there's a man. There's a man, I swear. But that's what I tell you, dear.
I don't like music. I like to do spells. Because music is just black ants crawling across white paper.
You know something? There is a guy who comes off like a wacko, but knows exactly what he...
Why for Pedro Show. Okay, that was the LA Eyewitness people getting amazed. Well, it's so funny at the end, you know, he goes, yeah, the guy comes on like a wacko, but he knows exactly what's going on. It was like he thought the microphone was off or something. It's amazing. I know that would be the interview, is Cap Beefheart and Huell Howser.
Yeah.
Why didn't that ever happen? That would have been great. You play like that? Whoa!
What's a booga?
Louis, get the camera. So, we didn't finish up the thing. You were at Todd Apperson's when you first heard.
Right, yeah. It's
Captain Beefo.
More than likely, if I remember correctly, it was Trout Mask Replica.
Yeah. And what was your feelings?
Well, first impression was, what the hell is this? You know, because I was a kid, I was into, like, all that, you know, Kiss and Bowie and stuff like that. And it was interesting. I really didn't get into, like, to Beefheart until you played, or maybe it was Todd, but the Shiny Beast album.
Yeah.
And when I heard that, then I was like, this is a little bit, I can get into it a little bit more. But,
Because the Trout Mask you thought was too out?
Yeah, it's kind of
out. It might have been mixed with that and then your first time hearing.
Yeah, well, it was kind of, you know, it seemed kind of dark, you know, like Dachau Blues, you know, it was like,
China
huh?
Pig.
Yeah.
And so. all that, really, free association poetry, like, that kind of new.
Yeah, it was new. Yeah, it was new.
Mm-hmm. Rock and roll had started getting pretty predictable with the lyrics and
right.
stuff. And, he was... And then, I think you got back via Zappa or something, because he made a couple records, Zootalores?
The Bongo Fury?
Bongo mm-hmm. Fury?
He also sang
Zootalores.
On Hot Rats.
Which one's the live one?
Zootalores.
Yeah.
But he also sang on
and that's what he toured with them, right? He goes back to the Mothers.
Did he sing Willie the Pimp? Yeah.
I think so.
Willie the Pimp, yeah.
Yeah. And because they grew up together. And maybe a little bit of rivalry. I don't know. Think about it. Trap Nash replica actually has the conversations between them. You used in the recorder, you know, the blimp, Frank, you know. Frank Zappa was a producer. And I think it was on his label through Warner, some Straight. Yeah, it's something called Straight.
Isn't that the one that that Cooper's first album was on?
That's right. He's the first two albums from Alice
no,
Cooper.
No, it was Straight or Bizarre or something like that. What was... God, I don't know. I can't remember.
Straight. It was Pretty's For You and...
Easy Action.
Easy Action.
Easy Action's a good album.
I like Pretty's For You, too. They're really trippy.
Yeah.
Nothing like this, like, kind of rock and roll band that he got famous for. Kind of trippy, what do you call art rock kind of angle. But knowing Frank Zappa, you know, that's what he was into. Cooper later went to Ezrin, you know, and Bob Ezrin had a whole rock thing. But Captain Beefheart... what's that?
It's Zappa's album, Hot Rats.
Oh, yeah.
He
yeah.
does Willie the Pimp.
I think Cap Beefheart, with the punk scene especially, had huge influence.
No Residue.
The gatefolds were always like this.
Mine were.
You know what I'm saying, though? When punk movement started rolling and stuff, he was one of the foundations of, I think he hoisted up the freak flag high enough to enable people or let them know it's okay to go wild with music and not be so, like the name of one of his records, Safe as Milk. It seemed to me a lot of his thing was to shake things up. And then in his own words, he speaks about that thus. But that's... I don't think that's what the other guys are on. Joe Boone's pointing to me something on there. Because I remember the logo on the Cooper one was a cigarette.
Huh.
Or something. For Straight. If I remember right. If I'm not too confused. But, I mean, we owed him a huge debt. I know us, Big Boone used to speak about him in interviews all the time because, D. Boone was a painter. And, our artist on other levels than just music. And I think he related with that. Cap Beefheart, too. I think that's why he went to painting. He probably thought it did about as much as he could do. And it would be interesting. We're coming on the end of the second hour, but next hour I got him in 1993 reading some of his own poetry. And with no music, and just reading the poetry. And it's a mind blow, but you can also tell where he's at in his life.
So it's all expressing himself one way or another.
Yeah, it's all about expression. He's great. He's a pioneer. At the end of the second hour of the January 2nd, 2011 Watt for Pedro show, hold tight for hour three. January 2nd, 2011. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
Fallen ditch. When I get lonesome, the wind begin to moan. When I trip, fall in ditch, somebody wanna throw the dirt right down. When I feel like dying, the sun come out, stole my fear and gone. Who's afraid of the spirit but the blues for bones? Who's afraid of the falling ditch? Falling ditch ain't gonna get my bones. How's that for the spirit? How's that for the things? Ain't my fault the things gone wrong. When I'm smiling, my face wrinkles up real warm. When I'm frowning, things just turn to stone. fallen ditch ain't gonna get my bones. When I get lonesome, the wind begin to moan. Fallen ditch ain't gonna get my bones. The tired plane, the bravas white and yellow elastic, and held to foam cones, the corners triangular shaped pyramids, three edges made one point, starfish and emery boards, triple D cupped and poked to a point. The main character was composed into a bow that broke first in the front and equal on adjacent sides. American Cowboy was approaching on a collision course. His hands groped, outstretched, three digits, triangular, to the front nail. A line was drawn from the middle finger to the knuckle of the index finger across the middle finger into the third, creating a perfect arrow with an imaginary front point. Skeleton makes good. There's so many things to feel and see while you're awake. They're just out of reach, out of grasp, yeah, out of reach, and just as many, maybe more, the minute that you sleep. So I got to throw my preach. Skeleton breath, scorpion blush. I have a crush on your skeleton. Watch out, unsuspecting stranger. You'll fall off the log, head first into dreams, end up screaming. This will calm the wolf, and that will calm the fog. What will peen the rain? What will preen the hog? Oh, you mean earth and hell over you, and laugh at your tire tracks if you get up. Skeleton makes good. Safe sex drill. The child held the old TP roll, carefully, thoughtful not to misshape the hole. Tulip, it could be a tremendous black upside-down tulip. It could be a black fish's tail. It could be a day artistically crimped and buoyant in its taped together way. Gill. Bub and Gill. Bub and Gill. Bub in India. Bub and Matt. Bub in the wool. Bub in a rug. Endure Bub. Bub in stitches, glass bub, bub in rope, bub in jail, bub in tent, bub in pail, bub on springs, bubs, brakes, bub in pajamas, bubs party with Gil and Matt and bub in stitches. You break bub, Gil's pill, perfume roll.
What for Pedro show? You just heard Cap Beefheart reading some of his poetry, 1993. And, yeah, it's very emotional. But, you know, the thing about a life, yeah, it starts and then it has to end. The culture and stuff, though, I think the works, things can transcend and go through the years, through the limitations of the physical. And that's why I think the arts are so important. Whatever they are, you know, writing, poems, musics, painting. Raymond's in New York City right now. Yeah, I miss him. New Year's. All right, what'd you do, Brother Matt?
I went to a nice, cool little casual party up in Hollywood. My friend got a bitchin' pad on Sunset and Vine.
Yeah.
And just kind of had a great time there.
Joe Boom?
Nothing.
Yeah, I stayed home, Pedro. Like 90% of the New Year's Eves, I don't go out. I man the home fort.
Yeah, it's too dangerous for me.
And also, after New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, second year now in a row, I've missed polar bear swim. Last year I was in Japan, so I couldn't do it. But this year, you know, I had been psyching myself up to try it, and then, you know, deciding. Yeah, and
better safe on that thing.
Because of a weird wave or bad ground, and I slip and twist. If I hurt this thing again, I do have a rubber kind of brace that I could have worn, but I don't know. I just got to take it easy. Size things up, because this year I've got a lot of stuff coming up.
With the polar bear deal, Mr. John Olguin, a local Pedro hero, died.
He's always one of the first one in.
He died.
When?
Yesterday or the day before.
He missed the swim.
I think so.
He's the cat who usually leads us in.
Yeah, he's the man. He's like a 90, he's a Pedro legend.
Yeah. He's a plumber cat. He would dress as Juan Cabrillo and reenact. But he had Tugba Indian in him too, which was kind of tricky.
Yeah.
I would like to get something going where we'd get a statue of a little Tugba family.
Yeah, some kind of local representation there.
Yeah, because it was just Mr. White and Mr. Cabrillo down there waving to each other. Pigeon shit on both their heads, which is okay. I wish
they used to have a big anchor there.
But
I've
known some of the people. Yeah. There were people living here before those guys came. You don't have to say much. Just have a statue. Don't even have to say anything. But just people might wonder, maybe there was welcomers or curious. Or I don't know. But anyway, Mr. Olguin was a badass guy.
Man. Yeah. He,
you know, all the polar bear swims I've done, 7 of them, he was always he'd lead the king and the queen out there. There'd always be a king and the queen. Wow. Yeah, our town missed it. We're going to miss him. Essential cat. He was strong for the community.
Mm-hmm.
You might remember seeing his trucks, Joe. Because he had his plumbing trucks. They have his name on them. You don't remember? I mean, it's been a while now. Because He also slept on his porch.
Yeah, yeah, outside on the porch. Inside. His wife's an artist.
Yeah.
They live up there by my folks. But he started the museum down here.
That's
the
right.
The Cabrillo Beach Museum and the aquarium.
Yeah, he's stalwart for this community.
And they want to name that new high school after him, maybe.
Really?
Yes, I saw some movement.
I wouldn't be against that at all. Because he was happening people. That's sad that he left. But he had a full life, and he really helped his neighbors. Good cat. Anyway, so, yeah, I missed the polar bear swim. And if Mr. Olguin had to miss it, I understand why. Wow.
I saw him just a couple weeks ago. He was still looking good and healthy. So he had a nice, long, healthy life.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, what I'm going to play next now is an interview Captain Beefheart did with Christy McKenna. He called in. By this time, he had, it was 1987, he had quit music. You know, he kept vacillating between living in the desert and living in NorCal. I think by this time, he was up in Trinidad, and which is like a Humboldt area in the north. And, he called in to talk, and I actually, I don't know how, but just stumbled onto it while it was happening. And, only a little bit of spiel with Christina, and then turn on the phones. Most of the spiel was the phones and his people calling up and wanting to talk. And I want everybody to pay attention to this last call here. And, guess who the fucking idiot is.
So, Don, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, hooray, touchdown.
I wonder if anybody heard that horn.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what is that horn?
Soprano.
Yeah, do you still play it?
Oh, yeah, it's a king soprano. It's actually in tune.
Yeah?
Stole my Selmer during a tour.
Who's they?
I never caught who did it.
So obviously you don't miss touring.
Not at all.
So most people are probably surprised to hear you're still doing music. You still play every day and think about music a lot?
Certainly.
Yeah?
I think that it's something that it's like an allergy. I can't scratch enough.
How is it different from painting? I know you spend most of your time doing that now.
Painting is a lot more frightening.
In what way?
I mean, it's very, 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 very difficult for me.
But you're very successful at it.
Well, thank you.
Well, no, don't you? Haven't you found that you've been more financially rewarded for painting than for music?
Financially.
Isn't your life more calm and comfortable now that you're a painter more than living as a musician?
Not really.
No.
No, God, how do I explain this? This is a good one for explaining them. I don't know. I think, I'm not being facetious, I just think that it's similar.
Mm-hmm.
Although I enjoy painting right now more than I did doing music, mm-hmm. because I'm fully alone as far as with my brush,
mm-hmm.
trying to shake it like a good blue.
The last two cuts we heard were from Trout Mask Replica, which is generally acknowledged to be your masterpiece. Do you sort of feel that that's the best record you ever made?
They're all my babies. I'm kidding. No, I enjoyed doing that record quite a lot, and I enjoyed doing everything I've done. I like Lick My Decals Up Baby. I like
much at the radio station one. I like the last one I put out, Ice Cream for Crow.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that.
Did you achieve something with that record that made you feel it was no longer necessary to keep making records?
Making records, I never thought to be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed them. I think I got it on that.
Mm-hmm.
I hope.
Yeah.
I think I got it. I don't give a damn if anybody thinks I didn't. I don't.
Okay, next we're going to hear a cut off that the record that A&M put out, the legendary A&M Sessions, and the cut is Diddy Wah Diddy. And a lot of people have described you as a modern Delta blues man. Do you agree with that at all?
If it makes them happy, I'll agree.
Okay, so we're going to hear that cut now, and if anyone has any questions they want to ask, they should call 450-3524. You're on the air?
Hello.
Hello, yes.
Don, I have two questions.
Wow.
No, it's not that difficult.
No, I'm sorry.
Do we ever get to see your work, or do we ever get to, our eyes just, like, I'm dying to see your work at a gallery anywhere in Los Angeles or New York or anywhere. Do we ever get to see your work?
Of course.
Where?
The Michael Verner gallery of Michael and Mary Boone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow,
you've been
Mary,
there?
Yes, Mary, wow. She's a major collector. I mean,
she just had a baby.
Wow, exciting.
Max.
Max, she just had Max? That's,
yeah.
She's such a beauty. She has
Michael,
good taste if she shows your work.
Pardon me?
She has incredible taste if she shows your work. I'm so happy.
She designed a hell of a room.
Really?
She designed that room.
Wow. God, your paintings are too much. You should be...
Thank you.
...just as famous as an artist, as a musician. And my second question is, if you had your ideal band of all the people over the years you've played with, what's your ideal band of musicians? Because you've always had the best taste in musicians.
I think the last band, the last album I did, a very good group of people. I wished that I would have had the fellow, what is the matter with me? Eric Feldman. Played very good.
He's brilliant.
We have a long line of questions piled up here, so let's
nice talking to you.
Thanks for calling.
Nice talking to you, Don. Take care.
And the next question.
Bye.
Okay. Hello.
She was nice.
Yeah, she was. And here, you're on the air.
Howdy. Hi. I was wondering if there's an address that you can be sent correspondence. Or is that something that you'd rather not get out over there? I perfectly understand if that's the case.
You're quick. You're quick. Well, who's going to win the World Series?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I don't even follow baseball.
Really?
Really?
I like basketball better, actually.
Oh, I tell you, I don't follow too much on television these days. I don't get too inspired by what I see.
Nor I.
Okay, we're going to move on to another question. Thanks for calling.
All right. If maybe I could, like, write in or get the address or something, that would be most appreciated. If you could, to the station or something.
What did you send me?
I don't know. I have some xerography of some collages and things that you might be interested in. I don't know.
Yeah, but myself being a painter, I am really painting.
You're spending just all your time doing that, huh?
Period. Well, I play music occasionally myself when I paint. But I'm really painting a lot.
Okay, we've got to move on to the next call. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you.
Hey, Don.
Yeah?
Listen, I've got a big question to ask you.
Oh,
okay. It's not a real big deal, but it's this. And this is something that's occurred to me throughout my life always, But I remember one time I heard a long time ago, like, if you ever want to get rid of ants, what you should do is, like, get, like, a little jar of sugar water.
Yeah.
And put some sugar water out there for the ants. So the ants can go out there and just drink the sugar water all the time, and they'll never come into your house and bother you.
No.
My question to you is this. You being a great, you know something about those animals, I guess. Something about some guy living out in the desert that you know about that. I live in Venice.
Yeah.
What can I give my cockroaches so they won't come in my home anymore?
Give them a sombrero.
Okay, that's an excellent solution to a thorny problem. And now on to the question. You're on the air.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, great. I'm listening in one ear to myself. And what are you doing, Don? How are you?
I'm talking to you, listening in
good.
One ear.
Why don't you meet me at the Buffalo Inn in Upland tomorrow afternoon at about 3 o'clock with about, you know, maybe 500 of my closest friends.
I'm right in the middle of a painting right now.
You are?
Yeah.
How does it feel to be in the middle of a painting?
Frightening.
Well,
frightening.
Come on out.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Sure.
We're moving on to the next questioner here. Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Speak to us.
Hello?
Hello, yes, you're on the air.
Oh, it's my turn, is it?
Yes, it's your turn.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask you, Don, about your album, Unconditionally Guaranteed. It seemed to be a rather different album from a lot of some of your other work. I was wondering whether that was something you especially wanted to do when you made that album.
I did, but I sure as hell didn't want anybody fooling with it, which they did.
Well, you were on Virgin Records for that particular record, weren't you?
Yes.
So you'd switched labels from Warner Brothers at that time. Did that have any impact upon it?
Yes. I had just done Shiny Beast Batching Puller. And, wait a minute. I'm confused.
You had done Clear Spot, hadn't you, before that?
Done what?
Clear Spot. You had that come out in 73, then you had Unconditionally Guaranteed in 74.
That is correct. I enjoyed doing Clear Spot more than the other one.
I see. It just struck me as more of a soul-influenced album, that Unconditionally Guaranteed, so I'm very curious. It seemed to be more of a soul music compared to the more blues style that you have in a lot of your other work. It just struck me as interesting that you tried that style on that particular album.
I'll try anything once.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
I'm painting.
Thanks for calling. We're moving on to the next question. Hello, you're on the air.
Captain.
Yes. Captain.
Captain, hi. I'm
Don.
Hi, Captain. You offered much encouragement to my friend Carmen and I in the dark ages when we lived in Ohio. And I just wanted to know if we've seen the last of you on vinyl.
Well, if I start painting on vinyl, which I could do, you never know.
but musically speaking, is Ice Cream for Crow the last that we hear from you, or is that just the last for a while?
Well, for a while, it is definitely the last, but look at my paintings.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to look at your paintings.
I bet you can hear them.
where do you get the inspiration for your tunes? Is it from your do you start from artwork and then visualize the music from that, or is it the other way around?
You know, that I tell you, I don't know that with me there's any difference.
Uh-huh.
Although I like both things. I really don't know about that. That's interesting.
Are you painting right now?
You mean am I painting as I talk?
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't do that to Christine.
Okay.
No.
Good. Well, it sounds
no,
like
I just got through the painting, as a matter of fact.
Good.
10 feet tall.
10 feet tall. That's the name of it?
No, it's 10 feet tall.
Oh, it's 10 feet tall. Wow.
But it's 7.5 feet wide.
Uh-huh. Great. What about Ice Cream for Crow on CD?
I haven't heard it.
It's not on CD. Any ideas when, maybe?
I would think that they probably will do that. They love money. And I don't ever get any of it, but or if I do, it's very late.
We gotta move on to the next question.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Take it easy.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Don, at the risk of blathering fandom, I have to say, number one, I've enjoyed your stuff for the last 20 years at the very least. I just want to say thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I've really a Trout Mask replica I bought because the cover looked radical. And I must have, that's the first double pocket LP I played through three times in a row, all sides. And I've just you've never bored me. You've always held my attention.
Well, thank you very much.
The only thing is, I was going to ask you if you went to see Cecil Taylor here recently, but I didn't see him here.
No, I haven't seen him for years.
Yeah, it was. I understand it was very good. Herman Barker, a lot of the Chicago people, AACM folks were there. It was a very good show. But again, I just wanted to say, I didn't want to sit there and say, oh, wonderful, wonderful. I really, really enjoyed your stuff, and you've made my life that much happier with your music. I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. May I tell you one thing?
Yes, Don.
I think Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
Cecil Taylor.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, again, Don, I just appreciate it so much, and I hope you do it sometime. Come out with vinyl. If not, your art's fine with me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. We're on the next question. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, Don. I want to put things in a little bit of perspective. The Minnesota Twins won 10-1 tonight. You were talking about the playoffs earlier.
Yeah?
Yeah, what a game.
Did you
catch any of that?
10-1.
Yeah, are you... there's a lot of fans in Minnesota. I live in Santa Monica now, but I know a lot of people that are big fans here is back there.
Twins are very good.
Yeah, rooting for the underdog. That's what you've been all along, too.
They're very good.
Yeah, and so are you.
Well, how about the Tigers?
The Tigers, they beat them 4-1.
Yeah, but that's unusual.
Yeah, I know, but the Minnesota Twins are America's team now.
Yeah, but can you imagine being America's team?
I just thought I would put it in a bit of perspective.
This
isn't it
in
sports
America?
Ball, but I know you're a sports fan.
Well, sure, I appreciate that.
Okay, well, keep watching those Twins beat those St. Louis Cardinals tomorrow night.
Do you think they will?
I think they will, and I'm a huge fan of yours, Don. I saw you at the Whiskey the last time you were there.
Where?
That was about Whiskey A Go-Go about 5-6 years ago.
What was I playing now?
What were you playing? You were playing stuff from, oh, Jesus. You were like, dredging up a lot of the older stuff then. But it was good.
Not a bad place to play at the time.
No, you don't remember, it was before they painted the place back black and made it into a disco.
Yeah, you mean a show club?
Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah.
We got to move on.
Okay,
thanks
for talking to me, Don.
Thank you.
Thanks
for telling me.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
Hi, you got amazing psychic powers. I saw that Whiskey show, too, and you came out and said it smells like a Robert Mitchum film in here, and I'll never forget that. why did Hardy Hepp get you to write lyrics for him? Could you tell us about the crow that your dad had, and... just talk about those things, I guess.
As far as Hardy Hepp, he came to me when I was living up north. He just walked in, and he said, will you play a concert? And I played a concert at the time. I mean, for him.
Oh, and he just took those lyrics and put them to his own music then?
I don't know.
Because he has two albums out, and each one has one song with your lyrics.
You're kidding.
Nope. And also, Ice Cream for Crow is available on CD as an import.
It is?
Yeah. Well, what about that crow with your dad? I met your mother once, and she's an amazing woman, too.
Oh, his name was Smokey.
Smokey?
Yeah, and he flew to a Helms truck that my father was driving and lit on the top of the truck.
And he followed the truck around for many years, didn't he?
Do you blame him? They had good product.
Trying to find some of those pineapple buns.
He did. My father used to feed him. Yeah.
Well,
so how did you, where did you meet my mother?
I met her out in the desert through a friend of mine, Fred DeLeo.
Fred DeLeo?
You know Fred?
Yeah,
well, I tell you, talking to your mother was quite amazing. She could talk for 3 hours straight about you and Frank, and we didn't have to ask her one question. She's got a lot of energy.
She's funny.
I felt really good. She said, you'll call her up in the middle of the night and play 2 hours of music. I says, wow, I wish I could hear some of that.
I did the other night.
She's a lucky woman, man. I know everybody on this earth that loves your music would love to have the same thing happen.
She's a nice woman.
Well, Don, I love your music, and we'd love to hear some more of it, so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we're going to hear a couple more songs by Don, and then we'll take some more questions. So here we go with Googlerize You Baby. Was Googlerize You Baby, and now we're going to take some more questions for Don, and here comes one now. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is Nick.
Hi, Nick.
Hi. Don, my wife and I are both totally blind, so you'll have to describe your paintings to us.
Mm.
And we'd like it if you'd describe, because we've never had anybody do it, what you looked like in your show business persona on your albums, what you look like now, what kind of things you do, you know, as a person. If we ran into you on the street, we want to know, what do you do for fun? What do you do?
You'd feel me if you ran into me, that's for sure. Do you have a beast, a lead dog?
No, both of us are cane users. We both bash concrete.
And you can do that without an animal?
Oh, of course, yeah. Only about 3% of all blind people could use dog guides, and only about 1% do. And we're one of those lucky 30% that are employed, of employably aged blind people.
What do you do?
Well, I provide tech support for a company that makes computer access devices for blind folks. And my wife is a cassette tape technician.
That's wonderful.
For the Talking Book Library. And she's also a music therapist. She's into traditional music, but I was a rock and roll musician.
What kind of traditional music?
What kind of what?
Traditional music.
Oh, like Hindemith and Beethoven and Bach and Mozart.
That can be wrong.
What are you into? Because I once heard somebody say that they read that you were into blues albums and stuff like that, so I wanted to know, you know, what kind of stuff you were into, what you did on your off hours, and what your paintings look like, since we won't be able to look at them.
But as far as that goes, I listen to Beethoven a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has good taste.
Well, that's great. How about you?
Yeah, I listen to Beethoven a lot.
Do you read?
Do I read?
Mm-hmm.
I do read, yes. I'm reading right now Dick Francis's Sleigh Ride.
So you like reading mysteries?
Oh, yeah.
Do you read much in the... What do you read in terms of nonfiction and fiction? Who do you like to read? What authors?
I like immensely a fellow named Vladimir Nabokov.
All right, Lolita.
You like that?
Yes. It was on Talking Book.
I mean, it's one of the best.
It's one of the ones they haven't censored.
Yeah, oh, isn't that awful?
Marty says, don't get political.
Who said that?
My wife.
If you don't mind stupid people in high places, you'll love the government.
Isn't it always that way?
A fellow said that to me when I was 13 in a place called Insomniac.
Wow, how old are you?
Me?
Yeah.
Five right now. I'm having a good time, but they hold me at 46, which is a big mistake. I'm five.
I can relate.
When I paint, I'm a lot younger than that.
Mm-hmm. So what are your paintings like? Do you depict things, or are they abstract, or what?
Abstract.
Mm-hmm. Different colors and everything, and shapes?
Pardon me?
Different colors and shapes, if you were describing them. How would you describe them to me?
Black and white a lot, and then a lot of color at times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to do one in Braille.
Really? Or at least raised, or sculpture, maybe. You want to play with that sometime.
I sculpt.
Hmm?
I do sculpt.
Neat. I'd like to braille some of your sculpture.
That would be interesting.
That would be neat.
Okay, we got to move down the line
here. I wanted to thank
here.
You for your records because, you know, I love them, but I don't want to hold you back in the past and be a pester, you know, about what you did then versus what you're doing now. Thank you.
Thank you, and you'll feel one of my sculptures up sometime.
thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Don. My name's David. I just want to ask you two short questions.
Yes.
Who's your favorite painter? And do you believe in God?
I believe that God was quite a painter.
Yeah.
I think that most of the belief in God is very many people. Einstein had a good idea of it,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I agree.
And Van Gogh.
Yeah.
Is, in fact, my favorite painter.
Really? I just saw that movie with Kirk Douglas recently.
You what?
I saw that movie with Kirk Douglas.
Isn't that disgusting?
Yeah, it was pretty.
How could they do that? Have you read the Van Gogh papers?
To his brother?
Not that. By that stone cornball with all the syrup. I'm talking about the Graphic Society, New York.
Which book is that?
A lot of books.
Oh.
Enough to take all of our money out of that.
Wow.
I think that's the best stuff written about him. He wrote it.
Wasn't there a book called Dear Theo about it was his letters to his brother?
Yeah, but it's the New York Graphic Society did a better thing because they were his actual letters without stone syrup.
Hmm.
Yeah, that isn't a very good thing, I don't think.
It isn't.
Well, I don't think it, well, everything Van Gogh did was good, but I don't think Irving Stone is telling the truth.
And about God, what did you say? I didn't really catch your answer.
I say that Einstein may have known more than I do about that, and surely Van Gogh did.
You spend a lot of time in the desert, don't you?
Well, yeah, right now I'm spending a lot of time in northern Arizona.
Yeah, I've always had an attraction to the desert.
To the desert?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Don.
So thanks for calling. Moving to the next question. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Don.
Hi.
Just curious as to who were your musical influences when you were young to steer you in the direction of the music?
Well, I think probably my grandfather, my mother's father, Amos Kirkland of Warfield, who played lap guitar with a pocket knife.
I see.
As far as blues goes, he sang blues.
That sounds really interesting.
And as far as my influences go, I never was influenced.
Yeah, well... Did you find yourself to be, like when I first got turned on to your music was Troutmask Replica 2. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit, I was like in sixth grade. And somebody had bought the Frank Zappa album Freak Out for me for my birthday, and then I got into your album a little later on. I was at a very defiant stage in my life at that time, and that music seemed to set with me very well. Did you feel that you were defiant, that you were trying to defy everything else that was going on around, such as the music and the politics of the day?
Well, I seemed to do that walking around.
Yeah.
Okay, we're moving on, so thanks for calling, and the next call. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Don. My name's Chuck.
Hey.
How you doing? I wanted to ask you about that song, Diddy Wah Diddy. That's the second time I've heard it, and I really liked the way you did it. It was great. And the other version I know is the Fabulous Thunderbirds, and one, I wondered who wrote it, and have you heard their version?
No, I haven't heard their version, but you know who wrote that.
No, I listen to a lot of blues, and I haven't heard that. I'm really...
Bo Diddley.
Bo Diddley?
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. He's somebody... I'm into a lot of old rock and roll, and I have, like, about 1,700 records, but...
Really?
He's somebody I haven't gotten into enough of yet.
It's Bo Diddley?
You can't get to everybody at once, I guess.
He has one out right now, a new record.
Really? Well, that's good. I think that's great.
And I haven't heard it.
Well, I'll have to check it out. Do you ever listen to the Fabulous Thunderbirds?
No, I don't. But I hear that they're fabulous. That's probably why I don't listen to them.
Well, they're a good blues band. I've been listening to them since the first album. Anyway, I really enjoy your music also.
I'll tell you somebody to listen to.
Okay.
If I may tell you somebody.
Oh, sure.
Lightning Slim.
Okay, let me write this down.
Lightning Slim.
Okay. I really like Sonny Boy Williamson a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And Howlin' Wolf. I play harmonica and guitar. And, well, Sonny Boy was the first one I really got into that old stuff.
Well, he's a hell of a harmonica player.
And just very expressive.
Oh, he's incredible.
But I also heard you like Beethoven. You said that earlier, and I he's my favorite classical composer, so I was glad to hear that. I think
he's quite good.
Okay, we're gonna play some music now. We're gonna hear Sheriff of Hong Kong off Dr. station. Okay. This is KCRW Santa Monica, National Public Radio, serving Los Angeles and Orange Counties at 89.9 FM, Vickerham. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. This isn't really a question. I was about to go to bed, and I turned on the radio and heard Diddy Wah Diddy playing, and it so blew my mind and inspired me. I wrote Don a haiku, a 17-syllable poem, and here it is. Don. Desert. Painter wakes, sun hot, soul brush in hand moves, wind of content blows. And I still have an autographed copy of Trout Mask Replica I got from you years ago, and I hope you can get back to the vinyl someday and take yourself away from the canvas for a few minutes to maybe record something for a diehard.
Where did you get an autograph?
It was at a licorice pizza record store, if I can say that on screen, out in Woodland Hills back in about 1977 or 8, I think.
Yeah.
You were out there just promoting your newer album. And I don't know how I happened to have that handy, but...
Nice man, the manager of that store.
Oh, you knew the original manager? Yeah, I didn't have an opportunity to work for him.
No, I guess that must be the original manager.
Yeah, they've gone through a bunch of different changes. But I really love your music, and I hope that someday I can see some of your paintings.
Well, thank you.
Is there a place in the L.A. area that your paintings are ever exhibited or that you show?
Well, that'll be very soon. I hear my art dealer, Michael Werner, I was going to talk to a fellow from the Boston gallery, and evidently they're going to put on a show.
In Boston?
No.
Out here?
Los Angeles.
Oh, really? So you like posting that or advertising that, I hope, promoting that somewhat?
Well, I'm sure that...
They'll do all your promotions, huh?
Yeah, because my paintings are...
That's
only my promotion. We're going to move on now. Before we go to the next question, it is a shame that Don's paintings have never been shown in Los Angeles, but a book was recently published in Germany called Skeleton Breath Scorpion Blush that has a lot of Don's paintings reproduced in it and some of his poetry. And I know that they'll be carrying it at a bookstore in New York called the Untitled Bookstore on Broadway, and there's a good chance that the Amok Bookstore in Silver Lake will carry it. So people who want to see his work might pick up that book. Now on to the next question. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Don. What I would like to know is, when you were recording these earlier albums, did you ever record some songs that like never got released, and till we ever get to hear any of these songs, if they do exist?
Yeah, well, they definitely exist. Maybe you will get to hear them.
Is there a lot of material, or is it just a stray song here and there?
A lot of material.
Yeah?
I wrote three albums worth of material when I was doing Trout Mask.
So who has this material now? Did
Pete.
Does that ever happen?
Me.
You got it.
I haven't spoken to Frank for, since I did an album called, what is the name of that thing?
Bongo Fury?
Yes.
Okay. Well since you've said that you're not going to be putting out any new stuff, did you consider releasing some of the older stuff?
Not if it wasn't new stuff in my mind.
Uh-huh.
Which it is. But I doubt if I'll be doing that. What I'll be doing is painting.
Uh-huh.
You haven't seen any of my paintings.
Just on the album covers.
You can hear them when they're in person.
Yeah.
I would think.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks
Thank
for
you.
Calling. Hello, you're on the air. Yes, hello.
Good morning. Dan, I love your painting.
Thank you.
I've seen a couple of your smaller untitled work and, of course, the reproductions on your album covers. You know, all the fans out here were acquainted to you first through your music. But, you know, I believe you've left your mark on music and right on with the painting.
Thank you very much.
One of my questions to you is, during the Civil War, on the Union side, there was a General Van Vliet. I wonder if you might be related to him.
He was a tough boy.
I understand. My friend has a photograph, and he sees a resemblance.
Really?
Yeah. Is it true that you're related?
That's all quite possible, but I have not seen this person since the Civil War. I haven't ever seen him.
I understand that two of your vices are the Los Angeles Lakers and Haagen-Dazs ice cream.
No longer Haagen-Dazs ice cream, but Havana cigars.
Havana cigars? Or did you give it to Haagen-Dazs? They gave money to the JDL.
I lost about, I'd say about 30 pounds since I gave up the Haagen-Dazs ice cream.
Oh, you must be rather gaunt.
Well, I wasn't that gaunt before. I weigh about 184. At this point.
Did you ever carry on a conversation with Ross and Roland Kirk in a Los Angeles jazz club?
That's right. I miss him.
Oh, don't we all?
Do you know what I told him, the last thing I told him? He said, "Hey, Don, where can I get something to eat at this hour?" And I said, "The only place you can get ribs this time of night is in the Bible, Roland." He was laughing after that. He was a great player.
Did you ever have a chance to exchange musical ideas with him?
I don't think it would be possible to be around him and not exchange ideas, but I certainly wouldn't do anybody else's music, nor would he.
Did you really jump into a Brea tar pit?
I tried, but... Sue saved me because it wouldn't be good for a person to jump in the tar. That was when I was three.
I guess, yeah, it's true. L.A. is a poison paradise.
Well, it's a beautiful place. The animals, they get out of the tar pits. But I was going to go down and see some of them. But I was on a harness. Hornus, I guess you'd call it. And she got me before I got in there.
So we're going to move on to the next question.
Nice talking to you.
Thanks
Thank
for
you very
calling.
Much.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
Did I hear you say earlier that you play every day, your ex, at least some every day?
What, music? And
yeah.
Music? Of course.
Well, someone should be with you in recording you audio and visually. Everything you do 24 hours a day is a work of art, brother.
Wouldn't that be nice? And it's worth as much as any other art you make. It should all be together. You don't have to be with us or Peter in.
Your life is art, or it has been. You live your life as art. And you deserve reward for it.
I don't think you can do anything about it if you're an artist.
Exactly. You can't do anything about being the person you none of us can. That's why it's when you live it so naturally in that way, that's the inside. That's why it's worth it. That's real art. That's how we make it. We make us all better. You know, you don't make the world better, you make yourself better. And if you live reality, you show other people how to live reality. Is that
there?
I don't know.
It is pretty interesting, reality.
I mean, am I making any sense?
Yes,
you are, but we've got a long line of questioners, so we're moving on. Hello, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Don. I've always been so fascinated by the incredible counterpoint in your music, and I just wondered how in the world you ever taught it to the other musicians.
It wasn't easy. It sure wasn't easy.
Is it possible to be a little more specific than that?
Well, of course. I used fortunately, a tape recorder had a lot to do with it, off of a piano.
Uh-huh, and you just taught the individual parts to each individual musician.
Yeah. I don't think there's any other way. If somebody is doing something they're doing, if you want somebody else to do it, what better way is there?
Right, and they... At the beginning, did they tend to get a little confused when they were all playing it together live for the first time?
Hopefully. I'm a sadist. No, I'm just kidding. No, but can I say hello to Meanie?
Sure. Who's that?
Wingdale Fingerling.
Is he here in L.A.?
Elliot Ingber. Yeah.
Well, I've tried to figure out some of those parts as they're going on, and they're just, the more I'm able to figure out, the more fascinated I become by how they, how they're all working together, and it's, to me, it's an unbelievable feat, not only to have created him, but just that they could, successfully pull it off.
Well, definitely. I mean, which one are you talking about?
Well, I'm thinking of about, especially of, Lick My Decals Off.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, it's just so complex. I can't. And I saw you play it live once.
It was fun.
When you had, I could see that. When you had two drummers with you then.
You mean Drumbo and
Art Tripp, I think.
Ted Cactus.
Well, I think it was Art Tripp. It was in Cincinnati, Ohio.
No, but I call him Ted Cactus.
Oh, okay.
And he said he'd just stick to that. You were in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah.
What do you look like? I may have seen you.
Well, I was actually in the band that opened up for you.
Really?
But that must be 15 years ago, so I...
That doesn't... It's 15 seconds to me. No, which band?
The band was called the Balderdash.
I remember that. Now, what did you play?
I was playing organ.
I didn't see the organ.
There was a... There's organ and piano and drums and bass. But anyway,
how are you doing now?
Well, I'm still playing some music, and I've decided to go back to school.
Which school?
Which school?
If you want to be a different fish, you've got to jump out of the school.
Well, my last name's Bass, so I'm a fish of a certain kind.
Bass?
Yeah.
Okay, with that pun, we've got to move on. Thanks for calling. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Don.
Yes.
One of my favorite... Oh, Don.
Yes.
One of my favorite albums in college, and one of the most eclectic, was Safe as Milk. Just called to thank you for that. I hope you don't disown it that it's so early.
Oh, no, I like that album.
A couple arrangements by Ry Cooder. I've enjoyed your slide work through the years, too. You know, that's a favorite kind of sound of mine. And you always had stuff that sounded like no other.
Ry Cooder had nothing to do with anything I did. Other than Robert Peake Williams, if you're talking about a song called Grown So Ugly.
Yeah?
Have you ever heard that by Robert Peake Williams?
No, I haven't.
I doubt if you'd want to hear it and save his notes if you heard him do it.
I see. Well, Cooter is credited on the disc, but I don't know if that means anything, you know.
No, he was playing.
Uh-huh.
But he did do that arrangement.
It would seem to be.
Grown So Ugly.
And one other, too.
But which one?
Let's see. Sure enough, yes, I do.
Sure enough, and yes, I do.
So it says. But regardless, it sounds good anyway, and I hope some of your listeners check that one out, because it seems they've all tapped into you a little later on with Troutman. And I look forward to seeing your art.
Thanks for calling, and moving on to the next question. Hello, you're on the air.
Sounds to me like that guy is a Rykooter fan.
Yeah. Hi, you're on the air.
Am I speaking?
Yes, you are.
Hi, I wanted to say that, first of all, obviously you must know you've influenced an awful number of weirdos through the years.
Weirdos?
Well, whatever. And you've influenced my artwork and my feeble attempts at music. But I have a feeling that when I was a kid, my relatives cut out something from the newspaper about a boy who had his own TV show sculpting animals.
Do you remember? And dinosaurs. Do you know about that?
And I read, anyway, at that point, that already influenced my life because I was an amateur dinosaur sculptor. So I think that even as a kid, I was influenced by it.
Hi, we got to move on here. I'm
okay.
Sorry. We got time for one more call. Hello, you're on the air.
Howdy.
Hi.
Yeah, Don?
Yeah.
You know, Strictly Personal, that record?
Yeah.
And that picture you open up and there's... When I was young, that really scared the hell out of me. That picture, what was that about?
Well, that was a bunch of individuals, the band from Planet X.
Right, well, it was scary just looking at it.
That was me, the guy with the horn.
You got the horn and then the rest of your band, right?
Yeah, and the thing really hurt, man. I mean,
you know, I'm not talking what's behind it and stuff, just when you look at it, it was scary.
It scared me too.
Yeah, it was like 10 years, I'm still scared when I look at it.
I enjoyed that.
Well, thanks for all your stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Now we're going
to... What, for Pedro Show? Yeah, that was me. I was the last caller. I was the... Kintoof. And I was so nervous, you know, I didn't... say much. I felt awkward speaking about being so afraid and all that, but it was scary. I used to just stare at that thing. But he was very cool about it. He thought it was kind of scary too. That was KCRW 1987, Christine Kinna talking with him. And then all the people called up, you could tell how they kind of missed him not doing music anymore, but a lot of people understood. And I do too. I think Rimbaud wrote poems for only 2 years. Stopped when he was 19 or something. Some people are like that. They have to stop. I mean, he went to maybe his early 40s. So.
Kerry Larson.
Some people keep going. We're talking about Chuck Berry.
Mm, yeah.
In his 80s, doing gigs. And Marshall Allen, the lead man for Sun Ra, this cat is still touring. And you're like, you know, riding in vans and stuff.
Yeah.
Steve McKay was telling me, people have it, you know, that we're all different. We all... I still was hurt when I heard the news. I was doing an interview with somebody, and the guy told me, hey, I just heard on the radio right now, the captain's gone. And man, it hit me like, and I knew he had the MS and it was a bad scene. And so I should have been ready for it, but it hit me. And when the reality of that comes, and I finished talking with him, but like only half my mind was there. And I felt so bad the whole day, but maybe that MS had him hurting and stuff. Maybe him going away was kind of relief. I don't know. And you could tell one of them callers asked about his idea of God, and he said, well, I think Einstein had a better idea of it than I do. It's interesting. You know, supposedly his name came from him saying he had a beef with the world. In his own words, right? But I think it was just some behaviors he had a beef with. I think he actually really dug the whole trip, or lots of the trip. And his stuff, I said it before, the empowering thing, it just made things come alive. like that pumpkin patch where you, you know.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for coming aboard here, huh?
Yeah, good to see you.
Great to see you.
Happy New Year.
What a way to start off 2011.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you so much. Brother Matt, of course, always your own.
My pleasure.
Essential aiding and abetting.
Pleasure.
And I hope 2011, a lot of interesting shows we do here at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point.
Cool.
Maybe the rain's got another day.
We got another week of vacation.
We need it, right?
Yeah.
We need it, so I ain't complaining. I am doing the bike, people. I might have cowered away from the polar bear swimming, been in the kayaks in July, but I am on a bike now. And I brought the brought the crutch because of the rain today, but I've been walking without the crutch.
Cool.
It's weird. You get relying on that thing. Yeah. You have to break the habit. So I'm getting ready this Saturday. I'm going to play with Jandig.
Oh, right.
Very interesting.
Irvine.
Only going to practice with him a couple hours before the gig. And you got to check this guy out. I think he's put out like 60 albums.
Jandig?
J-A-N-D-E-K. Kind of a secret.
Secret?
Yeah, only done one interview. And yeah, no person, public. Check him out.
It's kind of like,
you know the internet. You can work it.
Residues?
Yeah, something like that.
Who they are, they're like,
Yeah, something like that.
Behind masks.
Just a shadowy profile.
You don't know what is what. It's somewhere out of Houston, maybe, though. But I'll get to meet the man. I'll get to be his bass player for the gig.
Maybe.
I was chosen.
He'll be standing in the shadows.
He wanted to come do his first Southern California gig. And the promoter asked me, and the drummer is a guy from a band called Health. So we'll see how it goes. Thursday and Friday, I practice again with the Stooges.
James Williamson. Very cool.
Scotty Sound. I haven't seen them since September 3rd, 4th. So that'll be neat to see them because I have another tour coming with them. And I'm excited. They called me on New Year's Day. And that kind of sealed the deal for me because I was still on the fence even that morning, Saturday, yesterday morning. And then he's saying, because he's got, you know, the joints hurting too. And he says, they can weigh heavy on you, Mike. I'll go with you on that one. And I said, I think I'm going to bow out. But I know I'm a coward, but so that's okay, Mike. And I can't wait to do that again. But thanks again, Joe, for being on the show.
Yeah.
Everybody out there, I hope 2011 is righteous for everyone.
Yeah.
Everybody has minimal hells. I know that's a lot to ask for, but that's what I want for everyone somehow.
Deserve a break.
Yeah. Okay, it's January 2nd, 2011, Watt from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.